Veterans Radio is dedicated to all the men and women who have served or are currently serving in the armed forces of the United States of America. Today's Veterans Radio is brought to you by U.S. Wings. U.S. Wings is a U.S. manufacturer of the finest quality military leather flight jackets and much, much more. For more information about U.S. Wings, go to uswings.com or call them at 800-650-0659. That's 800-650-0659. uswings.com, a veteran-owned company. And the Marine Scholars Program at Ave Maria University. Go to avemaria.edu for more information about this great scholarship program. That's avemaria.edu.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
Good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio, and a happy new year to all of you. 2011 is finally over, thank goodness, in some people's cases, and in ours, we're just so happy to still be here and talking with all of you.
Sorry to be late for formation.
I know, this guy just ran, I'm going to drop down and give us 20.
Uh-oh.
Right here.
20 what?
Joining me in the studio right now is Bob Gould. Bob,
hey.
Standing in the door, of course.
Standing in the door and ready to go out into the big abyss.
There he is. And also joining us is Colonel Christine Cook. Christine, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
That's our Army rep.
Yeah, she's our Army, our Army rep.
Our Army... What would you say?
Liaison?
No, but there's a decor.
She's making faces at us.
Uh-oh.
So yes.
We just have to
Colonel
be careful.
Faces, too.
Colonel faces,
I've
yes.
seen those before.
So, and my name is Dale Thronberry, and I am acting as kind of the coordinator of this today. The crowds are screaming here, our studio audience. We're here to talk about what went on during 2011, so we would encourage you to get in on the conversation. So if you'd like to bring us your thoughts of what went on during 2011 and what you think might happen in 2012, give us a call at 877-573-7825. That's 877-573-7825. We've got a couple of guests on the program, but mostly it's going to be an open forum. When I sent out the flyer last week that we were going to kind of do this year in review, I got a couple of emails from people talking about what they thought were their favorite programs. And we did a lot of good programming last year, and we're really pleased and proud that we were able to do that. And one that was mentioned in our unofficial survey was the Sons and Daughters of Iwo Jima, which we did last February. For those of you who'd like to go back, you can go onto our website, click on our archives, and you can find it there back in February. But joining me on the air right now is my good friend and also a daughter of a survivor of Iwo Jima, is Joyce Faulkner. And Joyce, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be back.
It is terrific. And the reason that I wanted Joyce to be on the program is that she had just sent me a copy of an article that she has written. And I have to tell you that Joyce is a prolific writer. And her book that got this whole thing started was In the Shadow of Suribachi, correct? I probably missed that a word.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, you did it right.
That's good. And we discovered that we were both children of Iwo Jima veterans. And we decided, hey, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do a program around that. And so we did, and we found out that there are many, many more of them out there. In fact, you just recently wrote a new article. Who's that going to?
That's going to be for the Veteran Family Network magazine. It comes out on a quarterly basis, and it's a new magazine for me. I have never written for them before, and they asked me, if I had something of interest, and I said, I have just the thing. And because I also work with the Iwo Jima Association of America, and that was actually the group that we used to pull together the show, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Group was had for years been the reunion group for the Iwo Jima veterans. And they're becoming very fragile and less and less able to get together. And there was some reluctance by the the veterans themselves and the families. So let the group go. They wanted very much to have what they did be remembered. And so the year that I went, which was a couple of years ago, to their big reunion during the battle, the time of the battle, which is, of course, in February,
mm-hmm.
Was when I met all of these other sons and daughters of Iwo Jima. And many of us were, as we said in the show and in the article that I wrote, many of us would change who we were even before we were born, that we were raised by people who had been involved in this enormous event.
Well,
and in fact, if you remember John Butler, John Butler's father was killed on the Iwo Jima. So he grew up from the time I think he was 5 or 6 when that happened. Without a father, so, but in the memory of his father too, at the same time, because his father was very loved.
I think it's interesting when we think about how we are affected, or the, you know, events that occurred to our parents affect our lives, and you know,
absolutely.
We're not that, you know, that we're not that familiar with them because they don't tell us all the stories. They have all these, as my family calls them, the gray years, where they, you know, we don't talk about things that we did when we were their age or so on, because we want them to have their own experiences. But I think it's, if we have the opportunity, especially with so many of these older World War II veterans, as you said, getting on in age, we got to get their stories out while we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, that was one of the reasons that I wrote In the Shadow of Suribachi. It's historical fiction, but it was based on my dad's stories about these young men that he went to war with, all of whom didn't make it back. And so I always grew up with that feeling of privilege that I was born when so many others never had a chance to be born. And then, of course, there were all the historical issues associated with it. I mean, that image of the flag on top of Suribachi is iconic. I don't believe there's a soul in the world who's not seen that picture.
Right, and we had the honor of talking. We did a program a couple of years ago with our partner, Gary Lilly, that we were talking about, and we had the photographer on. Rosenbaum, something along those lines, and how there, you know, there were two pictures that were taken. Mm-hmm. The original one, which was a smaller flag, and then the one so everybody could see what, you know, the accidental
exactly.
shot. I think, you know, the photographer actually was sort of falling down when he took that. He didn't even know what he had in the camera.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine in battle, that would be the normal kind of thing. You shoot and hope for the best.
That's true. We're talking with Joyce Faulkner here on Veterans Radio, and the other thing, like, Joyce has many hats that she wears in addition to being an author and many other things. She is also president of the Military Writers Society of America, which we talk about quite often here on Veterans Radio because it's one of my sources for many of our guests. And I, you know, it's always a privilege to talk with Joyce and to talk with all these other members. In fact, we had Father Ron on last week.
Oh, did you? That was great. I listened to that. Yes.
Yeah, and we got such a we had such a response to that, and he had written a book called Tear in the Desert, and I had met him at the Military Writers Conference 2 years ago. But yes, it's anyway. So we're encouraging. We have Christine here. Colonel Christine Cook is also a writer, and I just saw that she wrote down Military Writers Society. And
I hope so.
So we're going to recruit a member for you.
We love it. Welcome.
Thank you.
And she wrote about her experiences in Kuwait when she was over there. When were you there? You were there at the very beginning.
2004. Yeah.
Right. And she has pictures of her on a cover of her book, which was Tales from Tatooine.
Living on Tatooine.
I knew it was Star Wars generated. She has a picture of her on a cover on top of a camel. Actually, wrestling it.
I was not wrestling it.
So we're gonna get Christine into the Military Writers. But I wanted to, and you have a new website up?
The new website is up. Yes, absolutely. Go take a look at it.
That's militarywriters.com, correct?
That's correct. And we've made it much more empowering for our members to be able to participate in forums and blogs. And there's activities if you come to just look at our site. And once you join, you get a password and ID, and there's more activities inside for members only.
I saw that. I got an email to put up my bio and all that other stuff on the site.
Got to do it.
That's good, because okay. I am a lifetime member of the Military Writers Society of America, and I've never written a thing.
Oh, but look at all that you do.
That's right. I've had the opportunity of talking to all of these people, and I can't wait. Great. You know, maybe someday I will have to put down the history of Veterans Radio and tell you how we got started and all of that.
Transcribe the programs.
Transcribe the
programs. I think that's a fabulous idea.
Oh,
yeah.
There we go. Holy moly. That's why we brought a colonel on board, because they look to the future.
Big picture.
That's
big
right.
Picture.
Well, Joyce, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio today, and I want to wish you a very, very happy new year, and also I want you to wish you a happy birthday, but we won't tell people about that.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, Joyce, we'll be talking to you again. That's Joyce Faulkner, president of the Military Writers Society of America, and just a wonderful woman. She lives down in the Pittsburgh area, and they have a conference every year in October, and I believe this year they're coming up. It's going to be in Dayton, so that they can go to the Air Force Museum there. And so I think we're going to have to mark that on our calendar in October to go back again, because we've been doing that program. I think I've been to three of them now. And it's just a great, great place to meet great Americans that are telling the story of our great American military
people.
How
many members?
Ooh, I don't know. I should ask her.
You should have.
It's probably well up in the hundreds. Well up in the hundreds. And they're bringing people on board all the time now as they're getting more noticed.
Well, they're getting noticed from us.
That's true.
Sure.
That's true. And
and can you tell them what is the contact, if there is anybody listening out there that would like to?
Well, you just go to militarywriters.com, and there is all kinds of information on there on how you can join. I think there are minimum dues. It's a great site, because they put all kinds of different workshops online, you know, how to find a publisher, how to find a printer, how to market your book, whether you should pay for interviews, whether you shouldn't pay for interviews. They have a little chat room there where you can talk about your ideas. And I know that a lot of the people that are there will edit the books. You know, it's such a cooperative type of scenario there that they will help each other out. You know, they'll send a copy of the book off, and then they'll red pen it and say, okay,
right.
These are some things you might want to consider
copy
changing.
And, right.
So, yeah, it's a great organization, and for those of you that are really into military and military history, I've met some great people there and great stories. All right.
Before we go to our break, which is coming up, talk a minute or two about the Marine Scholar. So, you know, we run that PSA every single week, and it almost like just, well, here it is, time to go get a coffee. But the Marine Scholars Program is part of Ave Maria University.
Down in Florida.
And Mr. Monahan, who is the patriarch, let's say, of Ave Maria, the village of Ave Maria in Immokalee, Florida, which is in the middle of the swamp. I mean, it's not swampy, but what do they call that? The Everglades. There you go. Yeah, they lions and all that going around.
Lions.
Well,
lions.
No,
crocodiles.
No, cougars.
Alligators.
Cougars. That's what they call them.
Bears.
They actually call they're not mountain lions. What are they? They're
okay,
Everglades.
I understand. Like,
lions.
Like one.
But Mr. Monahan.
Nittany lion.
I think I can say this now, and all our listeners, maybe some know, maybe they don't, was and still is a former Marine. Don't say ex, Bob.
Don't say the ex.
I will not.
And in fact, he sponsors a big Marine fundraiser down there for the Marine Scholars Program.
For the program. So when you hear our little PSA each and every week, you'll want to remember that if you do have a friend or a relative, somebody that you want to let them know, all it takes is a phone call and it goes from there. But it is a free ride. That is really cool.
What they have done is that they made a commitment, and this is something that we're going to be talking about probably more in 2012 than ever, is that, you know, how are we going to get these veterans that are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan reintegrated back into society and, you know, get their continuing their education and, yeah, because they need to find jobs, and they need to get the skills to get those jobs. And even though there are many skills in the military that you learn, most of all, I think, being leadership more than anything else, some of the skills that you do learn don't necessarily transfer into the civilian world.
Firing a 155, there's not too many civilian jobs.
I don't know. When I taught middle school, some of those guys could lob off spit wads, you know, from far away.
There must be something there they could be doing.
They're practicing early.
Yes, I think they're deciding that this sounds like a good career for
them. And I do want to say something about the Marines in general. There were two very, very successful entrepreneurial persons here in southeastern Michigan. One was Mr. Illich, who started Little Caesars, and the other was Mr. Monahan for Domino's.
And there's a pizza theme here.
Yes,
there is
Marines,
a pizza, theme.
I know, but
Southeast Michigan.
But they used their training and, let's say, the discipline, the organization, multitask, what? And they both, they didn't even know about each other. They created their empires 40 miles apart, and they became billionaires. They became, obviously, very, very, very successful. So that says a little something for all of you that are thinking about re-upping or whatever the Marine program.
We're going to be doing a program on that. In fact, there are a number of organizations out there, businesses that are franchising their companies. To veterans at special discounts and special deals. And so
not just Marines either.
Not just Marines. We're acknowledging that there are other people in the military, including three of us in the room, that were not Marines. But it's fascinating to see how the country is coming back to understand that these people need help, getting back into their careers. And it's not that they want handouts, but they just want the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with a lot of people that are getting out of the Guard and Reserves, I'm sure.
Right.
And so we need to
part of that, I believe, is also, you and I have talked about this, Dale, that there is a feel good where in World War II, you took an objective. Gee, it really feels good. We've got Bastogne or whatever, and we don't have that now. You're fighting individual. You're fighting as an individual. You're fighting for that person next to you, and so they are individual accomplishments. So when we help an individual soldier or sailor, we can get that same feeling again that we did when we heard about Bastogne or where we heard about Americans achieving objectives when they did in World War II. So that's what I feel, why people are responding more to that. And of course, we learned in Vietnam, and I know a lot of us were, me too, that'd be the day I would change my uniform in San Francisco. I didn't know, every time I hear you say that, that would be the day that I would ever do that. So we've learned from that, and I feel that we can feel good about these individuals, especially when we go out and help them.
Well, I think it's really important, and we want to get your input on this conversation, so give us a call out there at 877-573-7825. We'll be back in just a moment. We're going to run a little PSA right now for the Marine Scholars Program.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Enough about the Marines. We're back on Veterans Radio here and kind of looking at 2011 in review. Joining me in the studio is Bob Gould and Christine Cook. And we wanted to talk about a couple of what we think were the important issues of 2011. And Christine, you have a little checklist there.
My cheat sheet.
Yes.
Yes.
So tell me what you thought.
Well, I thought the number one news story for the military this year was the death of Bin Laden.
Absolutely.
That occurred on May 2nd, 2011, with SEAL Team 6 doing the work. So.
Well, when you cut off the head of the snake, you kill the snake.
No, you don't.
Oh.
Not when you're talking about Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a network, so that means
well,
there are a bunch of little nodes that are still around, but certainly it was a big deal.
Well, when President Kennedy was assassinated and how this country went into a funk, it went into a malaise, even though we were powerful and we had a powerful military, we still were. We were with the effect of our leader. That's what I feel has happened with Al Qaeda now, with the loss of Bin Laden.
But he was already a somewhat symbolic leader more than anything else. The people who were doing the planning were below him. He hadn't really done much.
I thought they got the second guy too, second in command, second or third. Not at that same.
Yeah.
Range.
No, I that one I would have to double check on. But I have heard that there is already somebody who has replaced Bin Laden, but you know they are quiet, they are nodal, and you know.
Well, if anything, it also means you cannot hide.
That's true.
We will hunt you down.
That is true.
And they did.
Right.
Really did.
They did. That was as Christine mentioned, SEAL Team 6, and there are the 50th. I want to say the 50th anniversary of the Special Ops program, especially the SEAL teams, was set up by Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 1960s, and has kind of grown from there. I was looking at that because I just got a book. It's called I can't remember now. It's written by a SEAL team member, and he's talking about the idea of using force when absolutely necessary, but also using compassion, mm-hmm. and how they are going to how this Navy SEALs are not just trained to go out there and just destroy things. You know, they're trying to also, as Bob mentioned earlier, the idea of winning hearts and minds, which is so difficult when we're talking. We're going to have a guest on in the second half of the hour, Bing West, who has written a book, two books, one called The Strongest Tribe and the other one called The Wrong War. And we're going to talk about how, even though you cut the head of the snake off, it kind of keeps slithering around there because, you know, we talked about this briefly at breakfast this morning, is that it's just a total different mindset that we just don't quite understand. We still don't understand, and it's you know, I don't think that'll ever, you know,
and
totally squared away.
And Al Qaeda is used to retreating into the mountains and then coming back out again. So we just have to. We cannot assume that we are in the clear now. Another thing that happened shortly thereafter in August was the helicopter crash that did affect Navy SEAL Team 6, and people in Afghanistan and Pakistan tried to say that they were the ones who had brought it down. There's still question as to whether it was shot down or whether it crashed. But either way, it affected about 30 people, I believe.
Right. And again, we look at this SEAL Team 6. And each branch of the military has an organization similar to the type of operations that SEAL Team 6 does because they all work together. You know, you've got Army pilots in a lot of cases that fly the SEALs in. You've got the Air Force on the ground setting up the communications and so on and so forth. So there's a lot of coordination. In fact, we learned about that when we were talking with General Wagner, who was one of the former commanders of that organization. It's probably the most amazing training. We're going to be doing a program on SEAL Team 6 coming up in February.
I have a connection.
Ooh, okay. I just happen to know one. Yes. And so we're going to be talking more about them. But I think that those two obviously were very important when you think about the country. You know, with all the economic things going on, and to finally get this guy. And, you know, I mean, all this stuff was set in motion 10 years ago, 20 years ago, probably. And, mm-hmm. you know, that it just took this 20 years to find him and to finally get him. And I don't, it's not that I want to sit here and celebrate that the death of somebody, but if somebody was going to die, it wasn't a bad one to do it.
Right. Now, before September 11, 2001, the military really thought that their next big thing was going to be in Korea. And so in the last month, a major thing has happened in that area, and that is the death of Kim Jong-il. So he was in place for 17 years. He was a very erratic leader, I would say. No one really knew where he was going to go next. And we really don't know now where Kim Jong-un, his replacement, will go. So that's one of those wait-and-see news events. But it is a big deal that he also has died.
I would think it is a big deal because they have nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, we don't know how many or how big and all those other different things. But now you've got a really young, relatively inexperienced, you know, dictator or leader.
He hasn't proven himself as either, really.
Yeah. But the people are not the people, but the military has rallied behind him and all these other things. And, again, see how this plays out. Because I don't know. How many troops do we have in Korea? You know,
I think about 100,000.
Wow. Somebody give us a call. You know what an answer.
Yeah. It's between 50 and 100,000.
I mean, I know it's a lot. And just to remind you out there, you can give us a call here at 877-573-7825 and voice your opinion. It's allowed. You can tell us whatever you want.
It's your microphone.
That's right.
To the world.
That's right. We've got it here for you.
As a colonel, I have an open door policy.
That's
so, this is the year of the drone, too, I think.
I love those things.
Of course you do.
I heard that the F-22, I heard this, in fact, from a guy in Dayton at the Air Force Museum. He said the F-22 is the last manned fighter. The last. How about that? What do you do after? You know, like it's going to be Star Wars. Here we come. There will be fighter pilots. Well, what will they be? They will be guys in rooms with joysticks and...
Well, they're there now.
I know, but fighter pilots.
Yeah, well, that's the Air Force. Don't forget the Navy. The Navy has their own set of planes.
Oh, okay. Do they
who's
got the drones?
The drones are the Air Force and the Navy, I believe. And we also have some drones in the Army. The drones are everywhere. But the point is that there are a lot of strategic risks involved in using it because of the fact that a lot of people are saying, are you... basically denying our own sovereign rights by having your drone aircraft over our country. And Pakistan is constantly upset about it. And in fact, we have just recently been having the debate ourselves whether we should put them on our own border or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
they might be affecting our own sovereignty. And then the other issue is that there is PTSD associated with the drone remote pilots in Nevada and Arizona, who are suffering from the stresses of trying to do too many of these and not enough people who are trained to do it. So they're in surge mode, and they've been suffering from stress at about a 17 to 33% rate.
Well, we know that's a big issue with the troops that are coming back, not only PTSD, but obviously traumatic brain injuries because of the concussions and so forth from all those IEDs and all the other different initials out there.
But these are drone pilots that haven't even left our soil.
I know. When you said that this morning, wow.
But the thing is, I remember reading about, there was a program on that talked about the drone pilots that are in Nevada, I guess it is. And, you know, they go in and do their thing, and then they go home to their family. And you know, they never really see the damage that they inflict on the bad guys.
But they have very long hours, and they know that they've killed people, and then you go home to dinner. And that has got to be very difficult to handle, going back and forth with them. And, of course, then there was also the spy drone that ostensibly got shot down in Iran. Might have broken down. We don't know. But it's affecting areas of the world.
On a regular basis. I think, the idea that that drone that went down in Iran was, we mentioned this earlier, we were kind of wondering, is there not a self-destruct button in these things somewhere?
And we've decided
if they could blow up rockets as they're coming off the pads because they're off in the wrong direction, couldn't somebody say, we don't want this landing. It's like a U-2 incident all over again.
Right.
And we got about 15 seconds before we take a break at the bottom of the hour, so we'll come back. After that, we've got Bing West that's going to be joining us to talk about what he thinks happened in 2011 and what's going to happen in 2012. So we encourage you again, give us a call. We'll be right back.
You can help the Army Historical Foundation honor the soldiers of yesterday and today. Go to armyhistory.org to learn how you can help build the National Museum of the U.S. Army. The museum will be the Army's national landmark, preserving the sacrifice of every man and woman who has worn the Army uniform since 1775. Visit armyhistory.org today and honor the Army's service of every generation.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
And we are back on Veterans Radio right now, and our next guest coming up here to talk about the year in review of 2011 and what's going to happen in 2012 is Bing West. And Bing, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
It is a privilege to have you back here. We really appreciate you giving us your time today. Bing is the author of a number of books that goes all the way back to the Vietnam era, but the two most recent were The Strongest Tribe and The Wrong War. And again, the reason I wanted to have you on today is to get your reaction to what you think is going to happen now that we're out of Iraq, officially, anyway.
You mean inside Iraq?
Right. What do you think will happen there?
Oh, I think it's pretty clear. I think it was an absolute disgrace, both for President Bush and for President Obama, what they did. And as a consequence, we have a prime minister in Iraq by the name of Maliki, who is untrustworthy, and a pure sectarian who is antagonistic toward all Sunnis and is beholden to Iran, and Iraq is going to be a mess, and it's not going to be anything we're going to be proud of, and I just think it's a shame.
Well, what... I guess the question, and you guys could jump in, what do you think we could have done differently there other than not go?
Oh, simple. Very, very simple. President George W. Bush and talked about, and I'm just going to just say what I feel because I lost so many of my friends over there.
Sure.
He talked about going out to do good in the world and to bring liberty to people. And he said that his vision was one of liberty. And he was going to create a democracy in the Middle East. And that was going to change the tide in the Middle East. Well, fine. If you believe in it, then stick to what you believe in. But in 2007 and beginning of 2008, there was a new election. And we knew that the current prime minister at the time, Maliki, was untrustworthy. And there was this very good non-sectarian Iraqi by the name of Alawi, who had been prime minister at one point, who had a coalition of Shiites and Sunnis. And he came to Secretary of State Rice, and he said, the Iranians are pouring millions of dollars into the radical Shiites. They're backing Maliki. I don't stand a chance unless you, America, help me by giving me some money and suggestions of organization. That's exactly what we did in Italy and in Greece and in many other nations at the end of World War II to prevent them from going communist. Secretary of State Rice went over and spoke with Congresswoman Pelosi, and the two of them agreed that it was against American values to give any help. So they walked back to President Bush and said, Mr. President, we can't help Alawi. That goes against our values. And President Bush said, you're right. We can't do anything to help him. And so President Bush, by being so high-minded, after 5,000 Americans had died and $800 billion was spent over there, he let Maliki become the prime minister, and then Maliki turned around and said, I want you all out of here by 2011, and President Bush said, I agree. And then Obama compounded that by not doing anything to try to persuade some reasonable people in Iraq that we should stay. So, in my judgment, one president and then another just booted this thing right out the door. But I'm a Republican, but I am much more disappointed in President Bush because he had all these vaunted ideals and then he didn't follow through.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No, that's perfectly fine. I have a tendency to agree with you on almost all of what you've been saying because. You know, when you go in someplace and you don't finish it, and you're of the age that, you know, we did that once before and we didn't finish the job.
Oh, we sure did.
And, you just never learn. Doesn't seem so, we don't learn our lessons sometimes. And that's what's so upsetting to me. So do you see Iraq kind of just exploding into sectarian violence again?
Not to the degree it did before, but my point is that it will remain a mess of one kind or another. It will not become a symbol that other nations will aspire to. And that was the whole point of what Bush was saying. I'm going to give you freedom. I'm going to make you the city, the shining example on the hill in the Middle East. He had such huge ambitions, and then he didn't follow through. So Iraq, I think, would be just have a punk government and go along with Iran and not do anything to try to get rid of that tyrant in Syria because Iran needs Assad in Syria. So in essence, it becomes a state that's a satrap to Iran, not a big problem. We won't hear too much more about it because the newspapers don't want to embarrass President Obama about how things are turning out. But it's not going to be what we could have established there, and for that, I put most of the blame on President Bush.
And I do know that international radio stations are discussing the fact that they placed the Sunni vice president under arrest and that there was a parliamentary walkout with al-Alawi and his followers and that there are a number of sectarian issues that have happened within 24 to 48 hours of us leaving.
Oh, look, he did it deliberately and he laughed at us. He didn't even allow a decent interval.
He was here, I believe.
Exactly. He just stuck it to us to show us what he really thought of us, you know. And for a long time, he'd been laughing behind the scenes at President Bush. And I just think neither administration did well in the case of Iraq. It's gone. Just another Mideast government that'll flounder along.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, if for our audience out there, if you want to get in on the conversation, give us a call at 877-573-7825, whether you agree with Bing or not. We would welcome your comments and your opinions. Well, if Iraq's going to kind of go the way that you think it is, and we got Iran in the middle, and then we got Afghanistan on the other side of Iran, what's going to happen this coming year in Afghanistan?
Oh, Afghanistan is just going to flounder along. President Obama most likely is not going to try to pull any more troops out of there. He'd take too much heat from whoever runs against them on the Republican side. And on the other hand, we did it again. We have a president by the name of Karzai in Afghanistan who's not up to the job. And I don't know what the heck we're doing anymore in Afghanistan to a large extent. We're just floundering along. And the only hope in Afghanistan is that we build a very strong Afghan army. But all the company commanders I talk to kind of indicate that's really whistling by the graveyard. So I don't think anything dramatic is going to happen in any way in Afghanistan over the next year. And the American public, it's just, I mean, we have so many other things that are so much more pressing than Afghanistan that we won't pay too much of attention to it. And our troops that are over there, they all volunteered. They all want to be there. I mean, God bless our troops. it's not like those guys with joysticks back in Nevada getting PTSD, which just blows me away. You're in the wrong business if you think you get PTSD because you're flying a remote drone from your house and you're worrying about it. Then get out of that business. But as far as the our troops in Afghanistan are concerned, God bless them, and I know they'll do their job.
They will.
So I don't see anything really happening in Afghanistan. The other interesting thing, though, is Iran. Now, I'm being a little bit mischievous about this because I don't think he's going to do it. But look, that's the big enchilada for about 2 years from now, and President Obama is hoping, of course, that he gets reelected before it happens. But suppose what happens when Iran is about to get the nuclear weapon? And that's going to happen sometime in the next year to 2 years, maybe a little bit longer, but about a year to 2 years. But supposing Netanyahu, and I know this isn't the way he's going to play the card now, but we know that Netanyahu and Obama heartily dislike one another. Well, the October surprise in this year could be if Netanyahu declares, hey, the Iranians are a few weeks away from really assembling a nuclear bomb, and that's it. We are going to strike, and we are asking you, the United States of America, are you going to come in with us and take out the Iranian air defenses? Holy smokes! That would really be a surprise, but I don't expect that in 2012. I do expect it in 2013 or 2014.
So you think that the Israelis will attack first?
Absolutely. Oh, no. That's not quite how I put it. I think that the Israelis are going to... The Israelis definitely would like us to go with them in a joint strike. And the Iranians have a fairly decent air defense, so it would make a big difference on how the campaign played out. I think that they will attempt to ask the American government, regardless of whether it's Republican or Democrat, to come with them. That's going to put whoever the president is in a heck of a position. But I'm absolutely convinced at some point the Israelis will strike Iran, because no Israeli prime minister, especially Netanyahu, but no one wants to be the prime minister that was prime minister when Iran got the first nuclear weapon, because that starts down a path where sooner or later there is going to be a proliferation of nuclear weapons to the extent that there's, you know, a good chance that somebody gets a hold of one that actually uses it against Israel. And therefore, the prime minister who was prime minister when this began would go down in infamy in history. Mm-hmm. And so do I believe sooner or later Israel will strike Iran? Yes, I do.
I'm flummoxed.
Well, they did it with Syria, I believe.
So. Oh, they did it with Syria, and they also did it with Iraq. You remember they did it with Iraq earlier. So this would be they'd be going for the trifecta. So, but if you will, you know, you're looking for surprises. I don't expect that in 2012. That's the surprise that I would see. You know.
Well, I guess the next question is that you mentioned that Afghanistan, of course, was the wrong war in your opinion also, because of this lack of focus and trustworthiness on the other side. Is that right?
I believe that both Iraq and Afghanistan were wrong because we had a set of generals, including General Petraeus, whom I admire very much, who garnered huge reputations by saying that they changed the doctrine for counterinsurgency and said that when you go into these countries, the objective of our soldiers must be to be nation builders as well as warriors. The reason that I said in my book that Afghanistan was the wrong war is very simple. You give our soldiers rifles, you don't give them checkbooks, because you expect them to be warriors, not nation developers. I do not believe the United States of America knows how to develop another nation, especially an Islamic nation that's like Afghanistan, that's hurtling headlong into the ninth century.
I know. I need to. I'm sorry, I need to cut you off for just a second. We got to take a break, and then we'll come right back. Please hold on to that
hold
thought.
Hold to that thought.
I do. I definitely want to finish that. You're listening to Veterans Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Actually, we're going to be doing a program at the end of January on music that has been written by veterans. And so we're going to, so if you know of anybody out there that has written a song or an album or, I get, no, they're CDs now, let us know about that and we'll have them on the air with us. We're talking with Bing West here on, as the author of The Strongest Tribe and The Wrong War about Iraq and Afghanistan. And we're getting his opinion about what he thinks is going to occur in 2012. And Christine had a comment during the break, and I'm going to ask her to jump in.
Well, first of all, I wanted him to be able to finish his thought because he was right in the middle of a sentence. So,
well, I was simply going to say that the essential mistake we made in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it was a military mistake by our generals, was changing the mission of our soldiers from being warriors to being nation builders. Because our military has no experience and no doctrine for nation building, and we as Americans don't. And the idea of building another nation, there's only one way you can do that when you start with a general, I don't care whether he's Petraeus or whomever, saying, I'm going to rebuild a nation. By definition, you've just started with socialism, because you've said, I, as a government official, that's who I am, I'm a four-star general or ambassador, I'm at the top of a government, and I know how to run a government. And so we're going to do this, that, or the other thing, and we're going to have this new nation, and we're going to give them the money, which is what you do in any communist nation. And we're going to set it up this way. You're not going to have free enterprise. We're going to help free enterprise, but the way we think we should help free enterprise. And that's nuts. First, as a country, that's not our basic principles about how a country grows. Mm-hmm. And second, our military doesn't know how to do that. So we've stopped it now in Afghanistan, by the way. You know, we tried it for a while, and now we're out of that. We're just back to training their army and fighting. But, you know, I I'm not a Johnny come lately because I've been saying this for years. Fellas, and I love you like brothers because you are like brothers in the military, stay with your core competence. Your core competence is defeating the enemy and training an Afghan army. And we took, and God bless him, the current general over there, General Allen, that's exactly what he's trying to do, is build up their army. But we're 10 years too late. We should have done that 10 years ago.
Right. Well, what I wanted to bring up, too, is the fact that in the past, you know, with Germany, with Japan, the people who actually rebuilt nations were in the Department of State. But the Cold War benefit when we ended the Cold War was that we basically made them about 10% the size of what they are. So our military leaders, when they were in Iraq and Afghanistan and were ready to pass the ball to the Department of State, found no one to pass a ball to. So I think that's what's also happening.
Well, sure. But I mean, look, of course, but consider. I mean, Japan or Germany, Italy, you're dealing with totally already developed nations with a history of education and good management. In Afghanistan, we're dealing with 30 tribes among 30 million people, 84% of whom have never gone to school. Mm-hmm. I mean, supposing I were to say, let's go out to the reservations in Nevada, and let's speak to the Navajos. And we will say to them, look, we did a great wrong 200 years ago, and now we'd like you either to join the Republican or Democratic Party and come into our nation. And the tribes would say, wait a minute, white man. We had an agreement that we could run our nation the way we want, and that's why we are different today as the Native Americans. Well, how is it that we went to Afghanistan with people who are much less developed than our own Native Americans and said to them, we're going to change everything about the way you do things, and you're going to have this democracy, and we're going to show you how to do it. I don't care whether it was State Department doing it or the United States Army. I don't think we could have done it.
I think you're right. 95% of them are agrarian farmers. And they're not used to a centralized government at all.
Who have never gone to school?
Right.
They're totally illiterate. Frightening to think the genuine arrogance of many of our people at the top, both in the military and in the administrations, filled with these wonderful thoughts and believing that they could create miracles around the world. We had too much hubris. And we did it with our own country, too, with the way we're spending money. We're broke as a country, and we refuse even today to admit it. Oh, well. Happy New Year.
That's another subject, right? Bing West, I want to thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio and sharing your opinions and thoughts of what's going to happen. Unfortunately...
Well, look, I don't want to leave on a bad note, though.
Okay.
Look, let me just say this, the good part. I mean, the young men and women who are volunteering for us are just off the charts. I mean, we have the most patriotic on the one hand and the most proficient force we've ever had in our history. I mean, and we have more reenlistments than we can handle. So the quality of the troops up and down the line is terrific. And I must say, even though I took my shots at the generals with some of their theories, what makes our generals so special is wherever you go, you see them out there with the troops. So we have a very unified military that will stand us in good stead no matter what happens.
That's very true. And thank you for those comments. And we'll have you back on. And we'll
see
what's going on in the future. Thank you so very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So...
there you go. We got about 3.5 minutes to go.
Okay, well, I've got a couple more military news and review if we wanted to cover those, or if there's something else you want.
Well, we were going to cover...
well, there's a couple of things that I do want to cover. I want to talk a little bit to remind our audience that, unfortunately, in 2011 is when our partner Gary Lilly was killed back in August, and we just wanted to... thank Gary for everything that he did for Veterans Radio and also, of course, for veterans around the world. And his statement was, every day he would ask, what have you done for a veteran today? And so we always ask that question to you out there. Gary will always be in our hearts and our minds. And as we continue in moving forward with Veterans Radio, we're going to maintain and remember his ideals and, you know, why we do this program. And that's to tell you, our listening audience, the story of what's going on, what we think is going on in the world, to tell you about some amazing men and women that we've had the honor and privilege to meet and to talk with, and to remind you, as Bing just mentioned, that the military that they have today is probably the finest, the best trained, the most educated that we've ever had in the history of our country. And I think we have every right, and we should be very proud of these men and women, because, again, they are putting their lives on the line for you folks out there and for us here. And without them, who knows? Who knows?
They're putting their lives on the line for our policy.
No, and they don't ask. You know, the thing is that we have it, since we have our government the way that it is, you know, they don't set the policy. They just follow it along.
Right. And that's 1.5% of our entire population.
That's right. You talk about the one percenters.
Yes. That'd be the one.
And they're not making a gazillion dollars either.
No, they are not.
So we wanted to make sure that we let everybody know who works here on Veterans Radio. And so I'm going to ask our three people over on the other side of the window to make sure that, that we can get them in. One is Nina.
Hey, how's it going, Bob? Dale?
Well, that wasn't Nina,
that
unless
was
she got a bad cold.
That was Kai. That was Kai Brennan, and he's running. Nina's running our board today. Nina?
Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, and good morning to our audience. And Matt Dewar, who is the old-timer of our group back there.
Good morning, everyone. Always a pleasure to be on the show. We appreciate what you guys do for us as well.
Ooh,
thank
it.
You very much.
He's tired. His brand new baby kept him up.
Well, we all
we've been
hearing
that
when we're young. Yeah. You know that we have these little kids around the area running things.
Hey, Kai has something. Go ahead. Kai.
Hey, yeah, Bob and Dale. Even with Gary not being here anymore. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you guys every Saturday morning, more than I can express with words.
Ooh.
And I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your service to the country. We got about 30 seconds to go. What's
another
coming up?
Another year
coming up next week. What do you got?
I'll see you next. We're going to be doing Operation Vengeance, which was the shooting down of the airplane of Admiral Yamamoto.
Going back to World War II.
Yes,
at that time period. And then we've got some other things coming up in the month. As I mentioned, we're going to be looking at some women in the military.
Right.
Talk about that. We got music in the military and all kinds of different things. And the program's over again. So we want to thank you all out there. Until next time, you are dismissed.